Blog Talk Radio.
Three cats get together, sharing provocative talk that will spoil the male's perspective on life, love, and relationships. Yeah, we're not allowed to not give an honest enough evaluation. And of course, we don't shy away from some things that need to be said. The three cats I'm speaking of, Mr. D. Maurice, Mr. Charles, and myself, Mark Elliott, you put us all together. We are One Black Man Talk. I want to thank you for giving us an air. I want to thank some folks over in Rome, Italy, and Poland that have been listening lately. I remember years ago starting this, who would have thought that at that particular time, people out of this country would be paying attention to and listening to what myself, Mr. Charles, and DeMaurice might have to say. It's been a good journey. It's been a very good journey, and we're happy to be doing so. In a period of time, we took a little break, and there's some things I was trying to do that didn't come to pass, and we kind of stopped for a little period of time and spoke with Mr. Charles one day. And at the end of the conversation, he said, "Bring the show back. Get the show back on." So, ever since that time you said that, we've been back on and kicking and going very strong. And I want to thank those who are giving us an ear. I want to thank Spotify. I want to thank Amazon Podcast, Google Podcast, iHeartRadio, Stretcher, TuneIn, for basically allowing folks to tune in and check us out. It's a thing that we love doing. I can speak for myself, and I think I can speak for the other two as well. We get together and at least once a week. Sometimes we take breaks, but for the most part, we find time on our schedule to get together once a week and talk. And when I stop and think about that, for the years we've been doing that, says a lot, because these two other cats could do many other things, man. They get together and basically chop it up, but they find time to do so. And I thank them, and this show would not be what it is. And it's kind of taken on a life of its own due to them. So I think those two. We're going to do something tonight that we did a couple of weeks ago, maybe a few weeks ago. It's a segment we call Shifting Atmosphere. I'm going to explain that a little bit later. But in the meantime, I want us to kind of take a little time and give thanks. Because a lot of times we roam around and we get busy doing our day-to-day tasks and things we're trying to accomplish. And not saying we don't do it personally, but from time to time, I like for us to take time out right here and give thanks. Because things happen. A lot of things have been going on in this world, and a lot of things have been avoiding us. I'm not going to talk about the pandemic. I'm going to basically talk about the fact that all three of us, and those who are listening, you have a chance to wake up each and every morning, smell the flowers, feel the breeze across your face. That alone, to me, is much to be thankful for, and I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful for I have a chance to basically exist, deal with beautiful people inside and out, get a chance to hang out with these two cats once a week, get a chance to basically show love and give love to others and feel love. There's nothing better than that. That's what I'm thankful for, and I'm giving thanks to our Heavenly Father for that and many other things. This gift of life is basically getting sweeter and sweeter every day that it goes by. I'll bring you a Mr. Charles as we give thanks, sir. Welcome to the show. How you feeling? And you know what to do at this time.
Yeah, no doubt. Feeling real good, bro. Just thankful that you have the opportunity to do what you do. Thankful for every day that you are blessed to be here. And then at that point, the focus is trying to see how you can assist others and how you can do the work that you're put on this earth to do. And you take consideration that, or I do anyway, how far I've come and where I could be. That's enough for me. I have my moments like everybody else where you wonder why. But on the end, when it all comes out in a wash, bro, definitely thankful because it could have been a lot worse, and thankful for all that that's happened and all that will continue to move forward.
Sounds mighty good, Mr. D. Maurice. Good evening, brother. Welcome to it. We're giving thanks your opportunity, sir.
Yeah, man. I'm thankful and appreciative to be alive, man. It's for the last almost couple of years, man. We you know, there are a few people that I knew and loved that are not here. There was something that happened yesterday, real quick, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but we lost an uncle a few months ago, and I was going through my phone kind of eliminating deleted messages and deleted, like, voicemails, and I came across a couple of them from Uncle Kurt. I could not erase them. I could not erase them. It made me smile, made me laugh, because, you know, he was trying to call me, and we finally hooked up and talked, but the voice messages are really just funny, just him being him, his voice, and his presence and his energy, and he mentioned in one of them, he's like, man, I don't even know what your voice sounds like anymore. I hadn't talked to you so long, so call me back. Thankful for what he was in my life and what he was able to do. And, you know, I always think of the good times that we had together. Yeah, we lost a lot of people, man. Just thankful to be alive, thankful that I could be of service to others. That is something that I'm thankful for. And, yeah, we're coming down to the holiday season, man, and hopefully I can have a lot of other great moments with family, friends, and people around.
It's interesting, man. I want to piggyback on what you said about Uncle Kurt, because him and I grew apart as we started to age and as I started to come of age. But when I was younger, man, he was one of the most powerful uncles in my life. He said some things I've always paid attention to and carried. And to me, that's what a true uncle is. Basically embarking, always on the outskirts, kind of paying attention. When they need to come in, they're ready to come in and assist and kind of handle. And again, some things he said to me, I still care dear, and have basically used to better myself and do some things. As I spoke earlier, we're going to shift the atmosphere. And we did this a few months ago. We were talking basically at that time about young men that are out there, in a sense, choosing to sell drugs and do things just because they didn't see any other options. And we probably always looked at them as being a certain way and looking at the things they're doing detrimental. And we didn't change the focus on that, but we did change the focus to where we're going to start to view them different and understand them in a different way. And in that, we prayed for them, and we're going to do something similar this evening. And it kind of comes from a basic choice, because a choice is a personal right. When you think about it, we all want choices. We want options. When I started to put this together, man, it kind of ran through my mind that choice and options. I have to say this because it's kind of always kind of stuck in my head. I remember being a kid, we only had a choice of two cereals. And at this point, I only thought these are the two cereals that are ever on the market. We either have Frosty Flakes or we have Corn Flakes. That's all we had. And I remember the day I walked into the supermarket one day, and I'm walking down the aisle, and I'm like a kid. Wow. You see all these boxes of cereals. And I realized that my mother wouldn't buy it at that point. My mother just wasn't going to buy anything else. That's all we was going to have. But there were so many choices and so many options that was out there that I knew nothing about. And when I think of a choice, it's an act of selecting when you're facing with two or more possibilities. Well, think about this for a second. If you let your mind just kind of just focus for a second, basically there are young men out here that were not given the choice to choose whether they wanted to be with a woman or a man. Basically, they had that choice forced upon them. And I'm speaking of hetero black homosexual males, if you didn't understand where I was kind of going with this. For a large and great number of them, they didn't have a personal choice. A lot of them were sexually violated as children. And they were left confused, torn, and really left to rationale the violation and struggle with this all on their own. And there's so many, when you know, you hear individual stories, but at a period of time, you start to realize this adds up to a lot. A lot of young men, as kids, that look like you and I, were violated by other men sexually and were left to deal with this on their own. Had no other opportunity to deal with this. And when you think about it, most of the times they were violated by the adults that should have been protecting them and monitoring them. But instead, they were performing these heinous acts on these young boys and robbing them of their choices, not giving them an opportunity. Now, these young men grew up to be men, and they're victims that basically of stuff that they chose not to be part of. And when you think about it, you know, for a period of time, we look at them sometimes and we don't know, we kind of maybe think what happened. We don't know the deaths, but we kind of feel a certain way. And I can say that for myself. I look at someone, I kind of go, not that I knew this didn't exist, but I can't say every time I looked at a homosexual man, I didn't kind of think about this. And I want to change that in my mind because realistically, you know, again, they didn't have an opportunity. It was pushed upon them. And with that being said, you know, we should welcome them as a community. They're our brothers. And family, in a sense, sometimes you don't see eye to eye, but that doesn't mean you don't love your brother, you don't love your sister. And with that being said in mind, you know, I had to basically get out of my own way. When I started thinking about this, I had to get out of my way and start to change my perception towards them. Because for the longest period of time, I couldn't always get around basically, I guess, the sexual act, the way they kind of carry themselves, not really kind of focusing, not saying I wasn't aware, but not basically focusing on why some of that is put in front of me. So here again, I had to humble myself and deeply take this to heart and basically alter my mind. So in that sense, I had to basically shift my own personal atmosphere, and I'm asking that we do this on the show this evening. And when we always do that, we do it with a prayer. And for the next 30 seconds, we're going to take time out to pray for these young men, older men. But we're going to pray. You could choose your own personal prayer, but I would basically say we pray for their strength. We pray that they should know that we understand. We pray that they should know that we love and value them, and that we basically open our hearts to them and pray that their healing will start, because that has to be something they're carrying. So for the next 30 seconds, we'll shut down and pray for these men. Thank you for doing so. This kind of came about for me. I was reading an article one day last week, and I'm familiar with this man, not by name, more so with face. And he was basically in a promo ad I came across about a month ago, and it was for a show. I'm not sure if it was a TV show. I know he's done some plays, and it was Cinderella. And I remember seeing him standing there, and just kind of got a funny taste about it. Just the way he was kind of standing gave me a funny taste. Well, this cat is he's an Emmy winner, Grammy winner, Tony Awards winner, and he's very accomplished. But as I read an article about him, he said he's not okay. Those are his words. I'm speaking of one Mr. Billy Porter. As I went deep into the article, he spoke how his stepfather, when he was younger, started a conversation with him about the birds and the bees, which led to his stepfather abusing him twice a week for 5 years. Think about that for a period of time. As a young male, or a young woman for that matter, you're trusting someone and you're engaging in a conversation that you think is going to benefit you and open you up and educate you, and this person turns around and starts violating you for 5 years twice a week. So in his mind, he interpreted the experience as being somewhat of an affair. He said it was loving, it was nurturing, at the same time was confusing, and it was an illusion of care. I also read that basically turned to musical theater as he aged as a saving grace, because I believe if he wasn't really performing, he would no longer be here, which says to me at some point this cat thought about taking his own life. So I throw the question out to you two gentlemen. I'll come to you first with the Charles with this. And first I'll say we are thankful that we had parents that shielded us, made sure that was taken care of, and kept us from all type of harm. Because a lot of these young men, in my opinion, were failed by their parents. and allowing some of this to happen. And I'm not saying I'm blaming them, but even in his case, you know, his stepfather, you don't become a stepfather unless you marry his mother. So where was his real dad? But with that being said, Mr. Charles, can you imagine waking up and through your mind such a violation is permeating and rolling around your head on a daily basis? Can you imagine that? And if so, how would you think you'd be able to handle it?
Nah, bro, I can't imagine that. I'm sorry. I mean, real talk. I'm not saying that I don't feel for them, but knowing what I know, I can't imagine that. And I know people are victims. That's probably one of my biggest fears, because being an only child, not knowing if somebody was going to protect you, I think it's probably a situation that only those that have been through it can really address as far as how they feel. So I can't imagine that. I can, you know, jump around it and maybe say certain things, but to me that violation is second to none, and I can't even imagine what they would, I mean, how you deal with that daily. And the most important thing for me is just the point that I'm thankful that it didn't happen to me, because even when some parents, unfortunately, they try to raise their children and whatever they do, sometimes they are too trusting. And they're trusting to people that they think are going to take care of their kids. And it's easy to say that and point a finger, but it happens. And it just, every time I think about something like that, it hurts my heart, man. It touches my heart because it's like, man, when you talk about violations, and I won't belabor this, when we talk about violations, that's probably the ultimate violation when you think about, particularly for a man or even a young boy, the ultimate violation, and particularly when it comes from somebody that's supposed to be looking out for you.
There was a story that happened years ago. It was about 10, 15 years ago. They're kind of similar to this because Mr. Porter was basically stating an article that he's married now. He's having a tough time dealing with in his marriage. He's married to a man. But there was a man, I believe it was in Baltimore, Maryland, and a priest violated when he was a little boy. When he became married, he had a hard time dealing with his wife, and he was conflicted from trying to be with a woman, but basically due to the violation, his body, I guess, may have been yearning to be with a man. He took a weapon, and he killed the priest. And I say to myself, I remember when that happened, I was like, that's justified. And for me, I'm never one to speak on taking someone else's life, but I can tell you, if I was in that situation, I'm pretty certain I would have done the same thing. I would be doing the same thing. Because it would be hard for me, as forgiving as I shoot to be and I try to be and that I am, it would be hard for me to live with that on a daily basis and not come take you out. And when I say take you out, it may never be by a gun. Because you have to feel the anger, the rage, everything that's inside of me. So it's simple for me when I say that. If I had to wake up to that daily on a daily basis, knowing that when I was a child, for your own selfish gratification, your own selfish reasons, you took that choice for me and placed this into my life? Mm-mm. And that, I personally, for me, I don't know if anything short of that would be acceptable. And I'm not suggesting that to anyone else. I'm just speaking on my terms. Your reaction to the question, Mr. DeMaurice?
Well, no, you really can't imagine that. I think about when I was coming up, man, you were always protected by your parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, older cousins, things of that sort. Even friends in the neighborhood, their parents and their relatives, and so we were kind of we were kind of like in a bubble, living in those communities, especially in the Black community, where you weren't exposed to certain things, and they try to protect your innocence and your childhood as much as possible. Even though being little black kids living in this society, they protected you from a lot of stuff that we could have been exposed to. And so, you know, you look at this age now where kids are exposed to just about everything, and they don't get a chance to really kind of be innocent and not knowing that certain things don't exist to them at that particular time. And how do they process that? And so, it's a very difficult situation when if you're protected, you're in a bubble state and being protected about that. Because I didn't really know about that until I became anything about that until I became maybe a teenager, because you saw it in media, things of that sort. But those are pretty much outliers for you. You saw Paul Lynn and him on Match Game and stuff like that, and you never really kind of thought about it. You saw Tony Randall. You saw folks that lived that lifestyle, but they weren't really out, but you knew that they were a little different than you, but you didn't pay it any mind. But, as a kid, I just couldn't imagine that. And, I don't know how it would have affected me. It's hard to, it's easy to say it now where, you know, I would have did this, that, the other, but, you know, psychologically, as a kid and growing up into it, sometimes when I talk to people about it, in that community, certain things happen, especially if it's traumatic, it stunts your growth. You know, you stay that person in that mentality for a while. You don't move on because you come almost kind of like stuck. You would expect that to happen more where people would retaliate, but other people, it feels like they're robbed of something and they feel less than, so they try to make themselves invisible or get around people that are like-minded where they can trust. So it's a tough situation. And I look at it on all phases of, you know, when you talk about male homosexuality, you have some that, you know, biologically, you know, the chromosomes kind of do their own thing. And I learned this from a older gentleman by the name of Prince Martin, who I used to have come and do seminars for the fathers and parenting classes that I would hold here in Chicago. Because he had a son that was gay, and he blamed himself for years until he had to sit down and do the research on how this happens. And it can happen through that. It can happen through, you know, folks being violated, and it can also happen through folks say, you know what, this is a lifestyle that suits me better, so I'm, you know, by choice, they do it. And so he said, I remember him saying when he said that he beat himself up for a long time because he thought he did something wrong or that something happened, or that, you know, maybe he wasn't there for his son enough, and he had to come to the realization that this is who his son was, and to love him for who he is, and not really kind of, and have that kind of aha moment that, okay, all this time I'm kind of wasting and trying to figure out how this happened, enjoying who this person is in my life. So I think that's what we were kind of getting to today in appreciating folks, because I think it's really tough for somebody to live that lifestyle and feel like nobody loves them or nobody loves them because of who they are. And that's a tough pill to swallow. And I do appreciate you doing this show because a lot of people feel ostracized and isolated. And that isolation makes it even worse for that person, that they feel like something's wrong with me, or I did something wrong, or the people I used to trust, I can't trust. And where do I go? What do I do? So it's a problem that I don't think we take enough time to look at and embrace some of the folks that are in this lifestyle, and letting them know that we're okay. We're okay with you being who you are, and just leave it at that and love the person for who they are, not what they are.
I'm going to go right back on the word okay, because I want us to, if we can, and we're just trying, there's no way that we can probably be accurate with this, but we give it a shot in the sense where when Mr. Porter says he's not okay, because here again, basically, this is he's pursued a lifestyle, you know, whether in a sense, and I'm not saying him pursuing it was wrong, but inherently he pursued a lifestyle that was thrust upon him. Again, he had no choice. He didn't. I mean, his choice was kind of give it to him for the most part for 5 years. That's where his choice came from. So I'm coming back to Mr. Reese. When you hear him say, Mr. Porter, we're speaking of, he's not okay, what could that mean? Just as you just know what you know, what could that mean in his terms? And he says he's not okay.
You know, I think of the reverse of what, you know, when you ask a man, and it's something on social media says this, and the guy got it right on the money. So when you ask a man how he's doing, and he says, okay, he's not okay. There's something that in a man's heart and in a man's kind of psyche that says to him, you know, whatever happened, you have to just push through it. And sometimes that's a bad way to kind of in a bad position to put a man in, and we don't know how to push through it. We're not creatures that tend to reach out and talk to other men or other people about our problems or about what we're going through or how bad it hurts. And so I think from that particular point, I think that's where he is. It's like, nobody really understands the pain I'm going through, the hurt I'm going through. They see all the stuff that I do, the accomplishments that I have, done all these years, but it's still hiding the pain. Because when you said that he kind of used theater to hide and do other things, the pain doesn't go away until you deal with it. So you can do a whole lot of other things to try to escape from it. Wherever you stop and wherever you kind of sit still, you're still in the same place. So that's what I think he means by I'm not okay. I've been masking this for a while, for a long time. Haven't really dealt with it, haven't really come to grips with it. But it's getting to the point where it's not, I can't do it anymore. I can't kind of put the front that I'm okay, that I'm fine, that I'm cured from this, that I'm over this. That's what it says to me.
Very interesting. Mr. Charles, same question for you. When you hear him say, and you make a very good point, Mr. Debris, a lot of times you speak to people and they say, I'm okay, and you know there's something behind there. And as you were talking, I'm thinking to myself, you know, we look around a lot of times and we see people overindulging in alcohol and drugs, and we don't realize sometimes that is used to mask and hide and cover up pain that they're dealing with on a daily basis. Because sometimes that's the only way they can escape mentally from what's going on. And I'm sure with some of these folks that are masking with alcohol and drugs, this could be part of some of their root problems that they can't get away from. As I said earlier, you wake up every day and it's there. It's not like you wake up one morning and it just walks away from you. And that's the heinous part of it. I mean, it's one of the heinous part of it is that basically it changed the map, the landscape of a little boy's life for the rest of his life. Something that he didn't choose, he didn't sign up for, he didn't get in line, and it changes his life dramatically for the rest of his life. Mr. Charles, when you hear one Mr. Porter says he's not okay, if you can't surmise, sir, what do you think is behind that? What is he saying?
Well, I think part of it is he's probably thinking about what's going on in his life, perhaps from the standpoint of is it to the point where I'm trying to remember, is he HIV positive? Is he dealing with that as well?
Yes, he is.
Do we know that? Okay. So
yes,
from
is.
That standpoint,
yep.
I'm thinking that, as it was stated earlier, he has had to mask some of his pain to get through what he needs to get through. He, as an actor, as a performer, as a activist, and sometimes, as it was mentioned before, it can become overwhelming, and he's putting up a good front, if you will. But when you ask him that question, it's probably overwhelming. He says, no, I'm not okay. And what you see is one way, and I'm doing a pretty dang on good job of masking this, but to tell you the honest truth, I'm not okay. And I think that can become overbearing, and even it can get to the best of us. And not knowing what stage he's in or what the situation is with his HIV, along with other things, I'm sure that's more than enough to say, if you ask me on a certain day, you might say, I'm good. Another day, it's like, you know what, hell no, I'm not okay.
Yeah. I think, like Matthew Marie says, that he's found a way to believe that he will be okay at some point. And you kind of basically bury yourself into your work. He could have buried himself into his work doing that and has done an excellent job. But when all that kind of, you know, when the roar of the crowd stops and you're not performing, you're with yourself. And those things walk up to you. Those thoughts walk up to you. Your feelings walk up to you. You're in conflict. And how can you be okay? How really can you be? I mean, you're trying to put on and sell something that's not original, that's not real. And it's hard. It's got to be extremely hard to be okay. Because there's certain things that we just can't go in our mind, open up our brain and just kind of remove. The mind works basically on its own. And it adheres to your thoughts and runs basically on its own. With that being said, here again, that for those 5 years, you know how many times that has to probably replay in his head? Of course, of 5 years. You know how many times he must think, I could have done, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? Why? I mean, there must have been 1,000 whys he's put to himself. And being now a grown man, I'm sure those thoughts still pop up. It may have been a period of time where he blamed himself. You know, he felt like, you know, he did something to cause it. And not having probably an outlet shortly thereafter to basically open up and share and someone to communicate with, his thinking was his own. So, yeah, at some point, you're not going to be okay. You're going to carry that, and you're going to try. But it's hard to believe that you're going to be okay, which makes me, you know, go to – realistically, Mr. Charles, when you think about this, is there, you know, after this, and here again, we're just basically taking a stab because it's hard to, as far as I'm concerned, for us to really totally understand and speak on it accurately, but we do the best we can. But when you think about happiness and joy, you know, I know I strive for that every day. You know, that's what I live for. But how can that, after such a traumatic intrusive act, and for us, our masculinity as men, it's just about everything. I mean, you want to hurt any man, for the most part, attack his masculinity. Speak about that. Make him feel that he's less than a man, or something about him that's not manly. That takes us to a totally different place. So when you think of happiness, you think of joy, you know, after experiencing that, how is it possible for him or someone that experienced it? And he's not one. He's one of several hundred thousand. Several hundred thousand, man. There's been so many cats that's come out over the years that said to me, yes, it happened to me. Yes, it happened to me. Yes, it happened to me. And is it so rampant that is unbelievable? It's hard to fathom. It really is. And we see them basically live a life, and if you know, that we assume that they're doing well. So I ask if we can answer this. Is it possible to find happiness and joy after experiencing such an intrusive act?
I'd have to say, and I'm just speculating clearly, but I think for myself, the only way I probably could, if it was even possible, I think there has to be some type of connection with faith involved. Because I don't know how you would deal with that on your own or without some type of belief or some strength that's a higher power than you to deal with that. And I think about that because I think depending on what you believe, there, you know, there has to be something that comes across, a higher power that can give you peace. It's almost like when you lose somebody in your life that passes away. And that's the only way I can equate it to what I've experienced, is losing both my parents so early in my life. Most people say that should drive you bonkers. Never went to a counselor, never even talked to anybody about this, really. But in that same instance, when they were violated, I think the only thing that really kind of gets you through would have to be a higher calling and a higher power, because sometimes you're not really set to deal with that. Not really. I really don't believe that. So I think there had to be some type of spiritual connection or something that you believe in, your faith, to help you get through it. And probably be some good days and bad days. But the other part of it, too, you mentioned about the masculinity part, about men being men. But if you don't know anything other than what they went through, the masculinity part may not be as strong for you. Because think about that, and we've talked about that, I think, off air, from the standpoint of, for some of them, the only sexual experience they've ever had is when they were violated by a man. And then they had to ask themselves, well, after a while, some people said, well, this is what it happened, so I engaged in it, but that's all I know. That's all I know. I don't know anything about how to be with a woman. That's all I know, so I just kind of engaged. So normally they thought automatically, I'm gay, because that's all they know. They don't know any experience of their life. So they just kind of ran with it because that's the only way it made sense. So it's kind of twofold, because they did what they thought was normal because it's all they knew. They didn't know anything else. So with all the happiness, I think in order to even deal with, calculate that in your mind or deal with that, I think in order to survive and have any peace, if that's possible, you'd have to have some type of faith or some connection with the, you know, with a higher power.
Good response, man. I mean, you touched on some things that I would say. So I'm going to turn right over to Mr. DeMaurice with this and say, in a sense, happiness and joy after such an act, Mr. DeMaurice, how is that possible for them?
I wouldn't even know how to answer for that population, to be honest, but I'm going to tell you what I imagine. And this is why I can't imagine it. I never had that experience. Is because sometimes what I find from this group, they're rejected by religion or spirit, you know, folks who are spiritual and religious and religious different affiliations. They're rejected by men and saying, hey, you know, you're not a real man because this, that, the other. They're rejected by society. It would have to take, you know, like Mr. Charles said, an act of God to come to some realization and some kind of understanding of who you are, and coming with other people who have shared that same experience and trying to get strength from that particular group that you identify with and that can give you the support and the strength to move forward. Because with all that rejection, you know, and different groups are rejected in different ways. But in that particular group, with all that rejection, it would be hard for me to kind of fathom how you get through that, and become okay and become and live with joy and happiness in this world where it's constantly reminding you that you don't fit in and that you're not a part of it and not going to be taken as a person of value because of what you believe and what you do and who you are. So in some ways I can identify with it, but on other levels I can't because I haven't gone through that experience. But I would imagine it would be, it takes a special kind of person to have gone through all that and with all the things that they are facing and fight through all the mire and muck to get to a point where they feel joy.
Gentlemen, let's take a little short break when we come back. Two more things I want to ask based around this. One is I'm going to have us share a story that we came across, almost sexual story, about someone we knew, something that we came across, and that may have took you by surprise. And then something I noticed, too, over the years, the younger generation tends to be more accepting homosexuality than probably some previous generations before them. And we're kind of basically trying to think and kind of see how is that. But in the meantime, we'll take a little time to kind of regroup, take a little break, and we'll come back. It's Mr. Jim Reese, Mr. Charles, Mark Elliott. We are When Black Men Talk. Time to time here with Black Men Talk, and we're doing that with this particular show, basically taking a different look, taking a different stand on something that we may have been standing on previously for a long period of time, and viewing it differently, taking an opportunity to basically humble ourselves and move in a different direction, and that's what's behind Shifting the Atmosphere. And this particular show, we're basically shifting the atmosphere to the black homosexual male that was basically preyed upon by other males, not given the choice of what their sexuality would be. Before we kind of stood back a little bit, I said, "One, take a chance and share a story that kind of took you by surprise about homosexuality." And I'll start this one off. I'm sure Mr. Dewey, you remember we had a cousin years ago, Johnny, and Johnny was, I'm trying to figure out how much older Johnny would be than me. If I'm 58, Johnny might have probably been about 6-8 years older than I am currently. He died several years ago, actually a while ago. But at a young age coming up, when Johnny came around, Johnny left. I remember Johnny left and moved to New York. At that time, I didn't know why. And I didn't know much about him prior to moving when he moved to New York, but when Johnny came back and I was a little older, I realized Johnny was different. And I realized, you know, Johnny went to something different. He acted different. And at that point, which led me to believe Johnny was a homosexual. So one day his brother and I was talking, and he gave me the background information that one day Johnny sat his parents down, his father and his mother, and said to them, "This is his lifestyle. He shows just what he's feeling." And his father basically took him down to the basement and tried to beat it out of him. Just couldn't accept it. Literally, you know, try to fight him and fight it out of him, which led to him basically either his father kicked him out or him leaving the home. And at that point, Johnny moved to New York City and found a community that would embrace him, and that's where he lived until he died. So, and this is going back, probably 35 years, maybe longer than that. And you think about it at a time where homosexuality has come a long way with acceptance. But back then, you talk about the closet. It wasn't something that you kind of bring out. And you look how his father responded to it. And I missed what you spoke of earlier about the gentleman that you know, how he basically felt he did something wrong. Well, our uncle took it upon himself to basically, with whatever he was thinking, to think that, you know, if I handle it this way. And I'm sure in him taking that way, that road, that was a lot of anger he had towards it that he was letting out as well. So, Mr. Charles, I'll come to you first. If you have something you want to share, it's an experience or something that you've came across that kind of surprised you about homosexuality, sir.
Yeah, what's weird is, as I think about this, there are a number of things that came up that I thought about. And I'm like, wow, when I took a step back and thought about it as I was older, as to different individuals that were living living that lifestyle and how they got to that point. But we only have so much time, so I'm going to choose one. There's a family friend that was, of course, I think whenever he's probably a few old years, enough few years older than me. And he was a young man. He seemed real cool. He was real cool. And he was considered a ladies' man, right? He was a nice dresser. He was always real cool. Ladies loved him. He even got married to probably one of the most prettiest girls in our circle. And you're like, wow, man, he would always get the girls. You're like, man, that's how it is. But then there's some other things that were going on where he was kind of hanging out with, like, choir directors, because he was in church, choir directors, and, you know, he had a different kind of growing up where he was being mentored by older gentlemen. I'm not sure what happened to him or what if he chose it or if something happened to him or whatever, but there were some signals. If I took a step back to kind of wonder, like, I wonder what made him happen, whatever happened to that point. So anyway, I was younger. I didn't see him for a long time until I became an adult. And then I was told by a family member that they lived in New York and they saw him. And when they saw him, I guess at that point he was living his truth. And he looked totally different. Of course, he had more feminine look than at that point or whatever. He was living his truth. And they called his name, and he did not respond, but they knew it was him. But I think eventually things happened or whatever, and he eventually passed away in New York. But he was living his truth before he passed. But like I said, that was just, I mean, he had the young lady he was married to, they got married young, and she was like, you know how you grew up in the neighborhood, and you just have like, or even that circle, like one of the prettiest girls, and all the guys, man, I wish I could just even talk to her. He was the guy that was, you know, he was the one that he got the catch. And then how this all evolved, they eventually broke up and got married. They got divorced because I think he was caught cheating or something, however it worked out. But to see how much of a ladies' man he was and things of that nature, and then he evolved into his truth, yeah, that was it wasn't totally a shock, but it was definitely a surprise to how he ended up living his truth.
Mr. DeMaurice, if you have a story to share that kind of surprised you, I took you by surprise about homosexuality, sir, we're willing to listen.
Yeah, I want to follow up on Johnny. I think the aunts and cousins that were his age always knew about him and who he was. And I think he became a fashion designer in New York. And I remember coming back for Grandma's funeral and how he was treated when he came back. Like, nobody wanted to be around him. They isolated themselves even more around him. But a really nice guy. I just remember him growing up, and I always felt that he was different. But there was nothing wrong with it, with his difference. But anyway, I was back in college, and Charles probably knows the guy I'm talking about. There's a guy by the name of Charles Martin. I think he's from Michigan. And taught me a good lesson about the lifestyle and all that other stuff. Because usually when at the end of the semester or trimesters, as we say in Wilberforce, we would have to leave our resident or our dorm rooms, and we would some of us had the opportunity to work in cleaning the dorms up. And so we would stay over the break, and we would stay in different apartments like the Mary Students Apartment, things of that sort, until the semester started again, and then we can go back to wherever we're going to be living. But I remember Tony Preston was setting up the room assignments for the break. And I ran up to the office to try to set up a room assignment to some of the guys I knew. But Charles Martin, who used to cut my hair, and he was out, he used to cut my hair, and we were cool. already signed me to be his roommate. So when I was telling the guys about it, they were like, oh, man, you know, here we go. You know, you're going to come back different after the break, right? And they were teasing me and all this other stuff. And I had a girlfriend at the time, may she rest in peace, and she lived in another section. And so I would always be with her for the, you know, during the break. But I would always kind of talk to her about how I felt about this and all that. And she would just crack up laughing because she's like, you're imagining stuff that's never going to happen and all this other stuff. And so Charles used to fuck with me during the break. So when I would go and take showers and think that I had the door locked and it was closed, I would come out the shower and the door would be ajar. Or he would, you know, he would do things to kind of mess with me. And so when I would come out, he would be looking at me and I'd look at him. And then one day he just laughed at me. And he's like, man, let's sit down and talk. And he talked to me about, boy, nobody wants you, man. And Charles was like, to me, for lack of better expression, is kind of the mother hen of some of the homosexual guys that went to school there at Wilberforce. Because they were, anytime he had a problem, things of that nature, they would go to him. They would always be around him. He was an older cat. I think he was in the military. And just a straight-up cat. And me and him started this dialogue about, you know, homosexuality, how he was, how he became who he was. And he's like, man, nobody's going to mess with you because I know who you are. He's like, you ain't part of his lifestyle. Ain't nobody messing with you. He said, the only reason why I signed you up because they were running out of names. I know you needed a place to stay. And by the time you got there, because he knew, you know, we all knew our schedule and all that. By the time you got there, there wouldn't have been no rooms. And so, but he really taught me a lot of lessons about, you could see Charles's mother through his personality. And how dominant she was and how he kind of took her characteristics to some of the younger cats that were in that community. And so he really taught me a lesson on, you know, just being straight up and honest and talking to people, asking questions. There's nothing wrong with asking questions. And I would say me and him became, you know, really good friends through that experience. But it took him messing with me for a little while and kind of seeing how my reaction was to really kind of get me to a point where it's like, listen, relax. we ain't this kind of mafia that's going to take you and change you into somebody else. We're just people trying to live and do our thing, and this is who we are. And it was a great lesson for me, and I always took that lesson to heart, and thank him for it.
From Black Men Talk, we get together at least once a week. And we share dialogue, provocative talk, and I love life and relationships. Always, you know, hitting that bullseye on an honest self-evaluation and not shy away from things need to be said. And I appreciate you giving us a listen. Also, before we take a break, I say to Mr. DeMaurice that it seems like the younger generation are much more accepting. I know you spoke of what happened with you with that gentleman where you had to have a conversation. But it seemed like the younger generation, for what it's worth, are much more accepting of the homosexual lifestyle. What is behind that?
I think it's because they were more exposed to it than we were ever was. We didn't see a lot of homosexuality in movies and television. We didn't see that. It was there. It may have been there in certain movies that was over our heads. But we weren't really kind of inundated with a lot of different characters, a lot of different shows, a lot of different people. Those people that were like that when we were younger, they were either isolated somewhere else or ostracized from the family, because I started to find out even more that on my mother's side of the family, there were other relatives that were gay that I had no clue about. And they were under a dominant uncle and wouldn't dare come out until they became older and adults, where they lived out on their own. And then they became, you know, they did what they, you know, they lived their life and did what they, you know, lived the lifestyle that they wanted to live. But it was like that wasn't something that was kind of accepted back then when we were coming up. It wasn't around us. There was no support system around folks like that. And so now you see support system. People are in support that you see it more often. You see it in television shows. I can't think of a television show that doesn't have a gay character or a lesbian character. You see it in movies. You see the stories coming out about the lifestyle, things of that sort. And I think once you start to get desensitized to it, you start to see it more, you accept it than the older generations back in the past.
Yeah, the desensitizing to it, it definitely plays a bigger part. But I'll add, I think they too, like you and most of us, and myself included, we assume too, because a man is gay, they're going to try to hit on you and make you gay. That's like, that was always like your initial thought.
Yeah, yeah.
That they were going to, they was going to basically
have some kind of secret juice or something they could sprinkle on you. And all of a sudden,
which made you angry. And that, to me, it's like they're more relaxed about that, because what they realize is, if that's who you are, that's who you are. It doesn't necessarily affect me. It doesn't bother me. But everything that you spoke of too, I think they take that mindset as, if that's who you want to be, you stay, you know, you do that thing, and I'm not going to pay any attention to you. Where we took it as an offense, even if we knew you were gay, because our mind had us thinking of the possibilities, what they may try, what they may be thinking. And, you know, as a man, especially coming up when we came up, if you thought another man was just thinking about you, you ready to go, you ready to throw some hands, bro. you just, if you thought he was thinking, that was enough to say, okay, wait a minute. So I think that's a part of it too. Mr. Charles, why does it seem like the younger generation are much more accepting of homosexuality, sir?
I think part of it is the things that are around them. We talked about, mentioned about TV shows and whatnot. I know that Mr. Porter was on that show Pose, and it was truly just about the lifestyles of gay men and gay women and just different transgender individuals, people going through it, and how they live their lives and a total lifestyle. So I think it's been more accepting that way. The movies we've seen. And I think, too, that the younger people have decided what they accept and who they want to be. So it's more of them from that standpoint, where they don't have to feel the need, some of them anyway, to hide in the closet. You can be fabulous if that's what you want to be. And what I mean by that, they can dress up and things of that. Some people just don't care. And they bond in the community where they feel more free. There's still some exceptions where certain people are afraid to tell their parents or whatever. It depends on what their individual circumstances. But I think also, too, that the world and the media has become open as well. And even with the media is doing certain things, every time you turn around, it's okay, as you mentioned about Mr. Porter, somebody having it where somebody can be fabulous, as they're often called. There's gay characters in almost everything that we know. One of the hardcore dramas, TV dramas, that was straight hardcore, had a gay character that was hard as anybody you'll ever see on camera, and that's The Wire out of Baltimore, and Omar, and the late, great Mr. Michael Williams. His character was hard as hell, but he was gay. He didn't play. he carried a sawed-off shotgun, and he's probably one of the hardest criminals or characters that you'll ever see in drama TV. But I think that, with that being said, that's why it's so more accepting, because there's so many individuals out now and have come out, and so many individuals living their truth. And collectively, they made it easier for others like themselves to live their truth.
All right. Gentlemen, we're going to switch gears a little bit. Thank you, too, for doing what you always do, bringing it strong and being a fabric of what we do here. I want to switch gears and come back and do some questions, but I want to take us back. Because I was speaking earlier how we came out, we took a break, and we got started back up again. Mr. Charles told me to, you know, bring the show back. But there was a song that was our opening song for a good period of time. And to me, this song, to me, always spoke volumes. And I want to kind of go back, because we haven't touched this song in a long time, but we'll touch it now. It's When Black Men Talk. This was our theme song for a while.
Oh. know what you do, but to let it slide. I'm over the fussing, and I'm trying to stop cussing. So we gonna chill, let's start to rebuild, boy.
Talk to me,
just like you used to.
Talk to me.
Tiptoe, Mr. Charles. What's your question, sir? We ain't tiptoeing. Bring it, bro.
Yeah, my first question is, knowing the topic of discussion that we've had about gay men, if that happened to you, how do you think your family will receive you? If that was your truth.
What's up? Say that one more time. If that happened... How do you think? Say that one more time.
If that happened to you, where you, that was, being gay was your truth, how do you think your family and your friends will receive you?
As Mr. DeReese spoke of our cousin, I don't think it would receive well. I don't think so. Maybe over a period of time, but I don't think initially, I don't think it would receive well. I don't think that would have flown well with the family, wouldn't have flown well with friends. It would not have been something of acceptance. It might have been one or two that have found it in their heart, but I think overall, yeah, that wouldn't have it wouldn't have kind of went over well. Your response, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, I look at both sides of the family, and no, it wouldn't be received well. And I would have been isolated. And just like Mark said, there probably been a few, maybe some aunts that would reach out and keep connected, maybe some cousins who I know of who kept close to some other folks who identified themselves as gay or lesbian in the family that has stepped up and remained close to those cousins. But it was something that was not, it wasn't accepted in both families. It wasn't accepted, or you were teased, or you were ostracized for it. So it would have been really tough.
Yeah, that's something, especially years ago, when you think about it, you know, it was, for the most part, you know, homosexuality back then, it always kind of flew under the radar. It got a lot of whispers when it came out. A lot of back talking, but it was under the radar. Your response to your question, Mr. Charles?
Yeah, it would have been tough. Most, I think, there would have been some exceptions where people would have reached out in family and they would have consoled me, because that was their truth. So they would have been like, don't worry about it, it's going to be okay. But there was going to be a number of people that probably would have, I won't say they turned their back on me, but they would have probably just been like, shaking their head because they were disappointed. But then there have been others that would have been a select few that would have been like, are you sure? They were like, are you sure? Why? Yeah, I mean, seriously, I can only imagine what my brother's going like, are you sure? Because that's not what you, we don't know you like that. And they would have perhaps accepted me eventually, but I think they would have asked me, what happened? Are you sure? Because that's not how it was. And Lord knows, I can't even talk about my dad. Is that what you're going to do to our legacy? My legacy. Anyway, that would have been a very interesting conversation.
Legacy. I like that one. Mr. DeMaurice, your question, sir.
Yeah, my question goes back to a statement you made earlier about, you know, somebody did something heinous to you or did something wrong to you, which probably explains why you never got over the Matchbox cars that I stole from you when you were a kid. So what are you planning?
Come
what punishment are you planning for me to make me feel the pain That's not good. You bring it up every now and then. This is when I think we're past it. You bring it back up.
Let me get this straight. You steal my Hot Wheels. And you steal my Matchbox car. And you don't think that's going to give me pain for the rest of my life? I love those cars, man.
I'm just, you know, I want to watch my back. I want to see it coming. Whatever kind of punishment, I want to be ready for it. But you would not let that
let
come.
Let me say
I
this.
Can imagine.
It has taken, it's taken me a while, but I found a way to get over that. I did find a way. But I do miss my cars. I do. Some of those cars are classics, man. You can't replace them. You chose to steal them. But, no. You ain't got to worry about watching your back, man. I've basically pulled back on that. I pulled back. Just a few times I've brought it up to you, I think it's been enough punishment for you, my brother.
Ladies and gentlemen, Klepto, I bought this man a whole box of Hot Wheels and Matchbox cars after that. Oh, I'm sending this one for Christmas.
No, that ain't good enough.
Come on. Well, I know you ain't even open the box.
The Hot Wheels?
You ain't even open the box. Like, man, forget no. I want the ones you stole. That's a hard man right there, boy. I learned how to count with the Matchbox.
Oh, God, man, so please. We can talk about your counting.
Don't count the numbers, right?
We can talk about your counting. But I got a question for you two gentlemen. I got a question. And if you could say something to the early 20-something of you, Mr. DeMaurice, what would it be? Looking back now where you are, I think you're in your 50s, but if you can go back and alert and kind of say something to yourself when you were 20-some of you, What would be some of the things that you would pass on to that individual?
I think Bell Biv DeVoe said it best. Never trust a big butt and a smile.
Watch out for the big butts
and them smiles, boy.
I wouldn't have listened, but I'm coming.
That will get you in trouble. Never trust a big butt and a smile, because that will get you in trouble, have you doing things, lying, telling lies, a thing you're never going to be able to do. So, yeah, be careful about trusting that smile and that beautiful body, because that will get you in temptation in certain situations that you cannot recover from easily. So, yeah, don't trust a big butt and a smile.
I think mine would be right off the rip, you should have waited on getting married, bro. That was your original plan. You had a beautiful plan, beautiful plan. And you chose to alter it. And, you probably should have kind of stayed with your plan, stay focused, stay disciplined. Mr. Charles, you're speaking to a 20-something old Mr. Charles. What are you saying to him, sir?
Calm the hell down. No, I'm just playing. I'd have to say, I would tell him, don't be afraid to live. Live hard. Don't be afraid to take risks. Don't be afraid to love hard. And most importantly, trust yourself.
Wow, that's a good one there. Mr. Charles, I'm going to come back to you for another question, sir.
Yeah. I guess my question would be, since we're going right there, you mentioned about being young. If there was something when you were, let's say, in your 20s or whatever like that, you could change. If there's something you could change, what would it be? And what would it be? If you could change it, that you go back and change it, what would it be in your life?
Wow. That's interesting. That's a very good question. Outside of what I said about the man, I seriously forgot that in my 20s. That I took up computer training and learned how to write code. And what happened was, it was a choice to do. And shortly after graduating, I got a call for a job in radio in another town and said, okay, you know what? I'll take this job, I'll go work it, and I'll come back to doing this another time, but I'm going to, you know, take this lead, I'm going to run with it, and that'll be fine. But it wasn't until recently, man, I forgot. I was looking at something, and I'm looking at the docs, I'm looking at the language. I was like, wait a minute, you know this stuff. So it's interesting because the radio job realistically was sexy. It was exciting. You know, it was energetic. You know, of course, radio at that time was my love. But cold probably would have been, not even going to say probably would have been, might have been more beneficial from a stable standpoint of something to kind of do. And I, you know, thought about this like a few weeks ago, how things would have been different, you know, if I would have chose to say, you know, say no to that particular job and basically just work with the code. And it's so funny, when I was working in Carolina, I remember one day there was a TV station in Carolinas, and for a short period of time, I became assistant program director. And the TV general manager called the station one day, and we started talking. He took a liking, and we started talking. I'm not sure, he may have called for this reason, but he seemed like he was going for something else, and basically offered me a job doing television. And I'm like, no, man, I can't see myself up there. And I think it might have been doing the weather, so to speak. And I couldn't see myself. And I was like, no, that's just not for me. That's not me. And I, again, looking now, who knows where that went, but that just wasn't what kind of piqued my interest at the time. So I look at those two, not often. I mean, the weather one, you know, like, yeah. But just recently, I totally forgot for years that I knew that stuff. Never went back, never, you know, trained in it, never went back, never gave it a second thought. So that's something that could have been a little different. Your response to the question, Mr. Reese?
I think I would have, I know I would have done this. I would have traveled overseas into different lands more in my 20s. Because I was single, you know, free to do what I wanted, I should have took advantage of traveling more. To change my perspective on a lot of things in life, to meet different people from outside the United States, to get myself involved and immersed in different cultures. Because I find myself doing that now with watching documentaries, talking to people in Chicago who are not from the United States. And I always find myself fascinated learning about different cultures and different people from around the world and getting their worldview, whether it's religion, politics, things of that sort. I do that now, but I think in my 20s, I think I should have, I've traveled, but I didn't travel, I think, enough to different lands that would have made a more of an impact on me than just traveling in the United States. Because I did travel, go to different parts of the United States, but I think I should have, broaden my horizons and went out of the country a lot more than I did in my 20s.
Mr. Charles, taking you back to your 20s, what you have, sir?
Yeah, I probably would have said that I should have done more I should have tried to expand my horizons more by learning more. I was kind of in a position where I was working for, trying to do the journalism thing and working in newspapers, and I was just so caught up in that, with that skill set. I always had the ability to take decent photos and try to get into when videography was taking off, and I just kind of was content with that skill set. And I think if I had done that and even done more work, if I was not afraid to branch out and do my own thing, I think I could have been a lot more ahead, you know, because that's come back to that point of trusting myself. And, trusting myself. And then also to the point, like D. Marie said, I think I would have traveled more. I would try to figure it out. In fact, I would have probably moved somewhere, and I'm not sure if it would have turned out the same way, but I probably would have moved somewhere I always wanted to be and just take a chance. And that probably was Las Vegas. Probably would have never got my master's there. Yeah, I probably went to Vegas and said, you know what? I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I'm gone. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna live for about 2 years and we'll see what happens. But which means probably my master's would not be in place. But yeah, it'd be nice to take a chance just to see.
Oh my! It's DeMaurice, the question, sir, if you have one.
Yeah. Currently, what challenges you the most these days as men in our 50s and 60s? What are some of the challenges that challenge you the most these days?
Oh, that's yeah. You know, it's interesting because simply stated, and it's not even a challenge per se, but it's just something that kind of ran through my head as I was thinking. Staying humble. Just staying humble, bro. Just kind of basically staying at even keel. Sometimes you get to the point where, I get to the point where you want to speed things up, you want to kind of, you know, turn the speed up and be like, you don't need to. There was no need to, and not feeling, not doing it, realizing that it's going to happen. It doesn't have to happen super fast. Just know, you know, the belief, the faith says to me, it's going to happen, and you know it's going to happen, so why are you rushing? So staying humble and not trying to push stuff to basically happen before it's time. Nothing to be sure before it's time. But just kind of basically going through really setting things in its proper place and putting things in its proper order. And I find that to be relatively easy, and I'm happy with that. And I thought that would be more of a challenge, but no, it's just like, And you would think as you age, you start to feel, okay, you're running out of time, and that's something I don't feel. I don't feel like, you know, time is short. I mean, who knows, but I don't feel that pressure of thinking, wow, as I age, time is short. It's just the time is going to be what's going to be, and it's going to get done what's going to get done, and there it is. Your response, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, I would probably have to say learning how to slow down, because I've always been somebody that wants to keep working and whatnot and keep working and not stopping, and always been on point and realizing that as you get older, you don't have to do that hustling and bustling like I used to. I used to always be on the grind, missing out on life because I was trying to hustle and do the grind, but having to slow down. Also, too, although I think I do pretty well for my age, energy, man. That's oh my God! I wish I had the energy I had when I was a younger cat. But now you just kind of go. Sometimes you tired, you just need to lay down. I wish I had my energy. Your energy in your body, bro. I just want to be able to, you know, put one, you know, dunk once at least in my lifetime, or do something that I could do naturally, athletically. And I think the other part for me is a challenge is dealing with understanding today's world, man, because it's just different. They don't, oftentimes today's world, certain people don't care about the things that we did. And if you let it get to you too bad, it'll drive you nuts. And even to the point of learning how to deal with this present-day media stuff. Everybody swear they're the journalists now. That kind of still burns me up about it, because they think they're experts and they have no damn clue, a lot of people. But that's the other part, too, getting used to TikTok and all that other stuff, man. I don't know how people can make money, perpetrate frauds, and get paid. I'd have been rich a long time ago. I missed my calling. I guess that's part of my age.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that because I came across an article the other day from Essence Magazine, and I'm going to say this. I remember years ago when the wife used to get Essence Magazine, actually a lot of times I would get the subscription for her because I would find that reading it was informative. It was just, you know, they always had good articles, and it was, you know, it was a good magazine. It was a good read. So basically, when I read this article, I went to their menu, started looking at stuff, and no matter what you click on, it was all about celebrity gossip. This couple is doing this, this couple doing that. And then I started realizing that, thinking, you know, Susan Taylor is long gone. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's white owned now. And wow. It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing where that magazine, how it's transformed itself into a piece of garbage, in my opinion. Absolute peak garbage, bro. I mean, I'm just saying the magazine's for me, and maybe that's what women are into. I don't give a shit what Steve Harvey's doing with his wife. I don't care what he's wearing. I don't care about who's dating this one, this person wore this or that. It is such simple BS. When you think about the foundation that magazine carried for years, to look at it now, and then I thought about it. Whenever you ever hear about Essence anymore? Outside their music festival, you don't even know they exist. It's sad, in my opinion. Mr. DeRees, do you have another question, sir?
I'll answer the question. I kind of feel...
I'm sorry, I can give it to you.
No problem. Challenges is discipline and keeping a positive mindset, because so many things that are bad, it seems like they're more fun to do. And so keeping a positive mindset and trying to do the right thing. I'll give you an example of this. Octobers are always kind of crazy to me for some reason. I don't know, change of the season or something like that. And usually when things start going wrong in this month, I start to sing the song by Richard Dimples Fields, "If It Ain't One Thing, It's Another," which is a really negative mindset to go into. But the other day I was like, I think the kitchen sink got stuffed up. And I'm like, in my mind, I said, don't sing that song. Don't sing that song. Think about more positive things. And I think this is a challenge for human beings, too. And so I went by, reminded myself, you know, staying on the task. Don't sing that song. Don't sing it out loud. I get in the bathroom, maybe 5 minutes of forgetting that mantra. Know what song came out of my mouth? If It Ain't. And I started singing it, and I'm like, damn it. So I realized at that particular point, you got to stay vigilant and disciplined and focused on doing the right thing all the time. It can't be like, oh, I'm not going to do it. And then, because, you know, a few minutes will go by, and you go right back to the same negative kind of thoughts and same negative kind of things that kind of get you in trick bags. So I find that that's more of a challenge now, just trying to stay focused, trying to stay disciplined on positive energy, positive things, doing the right thing. Because some of the bad things that you want to do and you have in your mind, it's like, man, it's so tempting. It will really make me feel good doing this, but I know the end result will be bad. So I got to stay focused, got to stay focused, got to stay focused.
Yeah, you hit on something there about the mind in general. It's funny because the mind is very interesting. What is fed, it will respond to. And if you feed it the negative energy, the negative thoughts, oh, yeah, it's always there. It's, you know, what is fed. And that is a battle. But, yeah, you always have to kind of take out that negative and reinforce it with the positive. Because the mind sometimes will just run towards the negative, especially if that's a comfortable place for certain individuals. And if you're constantly feeding that, your take will definitely be on a negative end. Gentlemen, we got to congratulate. You probably noticed already, Mr. DeRees, man. We got a little bit of time left. I want to spend a little time here. We got to congratulate the Chicago Sky, man. They, the WNBA women's basketball team, they put away the Phoenix Mercury this afternoon, and we all were kind of talking about it on the sports show Goon Squad. And you think about, man, Candace Parker, You know, she leaves, not late. I shouldn't even say that, because basically L.A. told her to get out of here for the most part. You know, they don't want this young lady on the Olympic team, all this. But she goes to Chicago Sky and wakes that franchise up and basically energized the whole franchise, and look what they've done. And Cooper, that young lady, my goodness, man. There's a couple of men basketball teams that could use Cooper. I'm not lying. Watching her play, there's a couple of teams out there that can basically have her at least start or come off the bench. But with that being said, I'll come to you first, Mr. Charles. If you have anything you want to say about the Chicago Sky taking down the Phoenix Mercury and picking up their championship of the season.
I'm so happy for Candace Parker. You know, I love her. And I think that she was able to come back home, win, show that she's a true champion. I think this just adds to her legacy. Played with some great players and the coach and whatnot, but for her to come back when nobody really expected Chicago Sky to do what they did and bring that home says a lot about her. I think that truly cements her legacy as one of the greatest basketball players of all time, because that was unheard of considering all of the barriers and factors they were facing. So kudos to her. Congratulations. Much love to her. Congratulations again, Candace. Call me. All right.
Mr. Demers, when you think about it, they lost, when she was injured, I think, one part of the season, they lost like 7 in a row. How'd they end up here, sir? How'd they end up here?
Yeah, when she came back, she galvanized them, and she's a true leader of that team. It didn't really go, to me, it seemed like they didn't get their just due here in Chicago, because the Bears lost, and then Fox was showing all the Bears interviews, things of that sort. And it seemed like the other night when they lost in that overtime game, they felt they should have won that. They felt they should have won that, and they came back the next game and just smacked the Mercury like no other. And tonight they were like, we're going to finish this at home. Today, we're going to finish this at home. So it's on her. It's on her. And some of the players that were unsung playing for Chicago, like Vandersloot, and other players on that team just stepping up and feeling that energy, and brought a trophy here to Chicago, which I think is the first trophy that the Chicago Sky won in the WNBA.
It is, man. Interesting, too. Game 2, I don't know if you two were aware, there was a scene where Donna Taurasi,
yes,
literally put her hands on a referee and shoved. And based on the rule of the law, she should not have played in Game 3. Actually, should have been kicked out in Game 2, and they would have won that game. She probably got kicked out. But, you know, the WNBA decided to allow her to play because they didn't want to take her out of the game for the ratings and people watching. But if you're going to have a rule, it's got to apply to everybody. And it is no way in the world she should be able to push a referee. Like, I mean, the woman barely almost fell over, shoved her like she's a piece of garbage, and was able to play the next game? I'm sorry, man. That just doesn't happen. But I'm glad, in spite of that, they're going to put their foot up the Mercury's behind quite well, and they're on to being champions. Gentlemen, we're going to kind of put the lid on this one. Thank you, too, for doing what you always do. You know, we'll get together soon. This is Mr. Charles, Mr. DeMaurice, this is Mark Elliott. It's when Black Men Talk. Thank you for giving us a listen.